Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Washington, D.C. is under siege. It has used to be the murder capital of the United States. Today, it is still a city in trouble. I have a good friend who works as a prosecutor. He prosecutes homicides in Washington, D.C. And guns are rampant in the streets. And largely because of those guns, people are gunned down. But let's face it, most of the victims are poor African Americans. Most of the perpetrators are poor African Americans. And white America really doesn't care. In fact, the Bush administration cut so many resources to prosecutors across the country to prosecute crimes like murder in high gang, urban, weed, poor African American areas that my friend, he shares a secretary with some 11 other prosecutors. They just don't care. The American government just doesn't care. And certainly the Bush administration, which cut funds to fight crime, just doesn't care. They don't care because black people are dying. So when the D.C. government, which, yes, let's face it, is elected by a majority of the residents of D.C. who are African American, tried to stop the scourge of guns, the Supreme Court brought out the dusty old Second Amendment, you know, the one about the militias, and said that it means that, let's face it, everyone in the District of Columbia has a right to have a gun to defend themselves, the justices said. But the more you read Scalia's opinion, the more you realize it is just out of thin air. It makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, the amendment, the Second Amendment, of course, most famously talks about a militia being necessary for the right to bear arms. But if the militia is necessary and you need arms for a militia, then no one disputes the meaning of that amendment. But if that part about the militia is merely advisory, is merely a suggestion, as Justice Scalia suggests, well then, why should there be any restrictions whatsoever? The Second Amendment says, quote, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." Now, anyone who knows anything about the Second Amendment knows where it comes from. I mean, this is one of those things where if you believe in an original intent, the way I do, then you really can't come to any other conclusion. The Second Amendment was actually parallels some of the things in the Declaration of Independence. You see, the King of England, one of the worst things he did was have a standing army. And there was nothing that the founders feared more than a standing army. And King would do things like go into their homes without warrants. And, of course, he would quarter soldiers in their homes. So the founders, having talked a lot about the fears of a standing army, decided that what they needed to do was make sure that such a standing army would never happen in the United States. And to do that, well, they decided to make sure that state militias could not be regulated by the government. Again, the Second Amendment very clearly says, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." Now, the dissenters, the four typical dissenters, whenever there's a 5-4 decision. And I should note that the D.C. gun decision was a 5-4 decision, just as was the Guantanamo Bay decision, the death penalty for a child rapist decision, and the decision that overturned the Millionaires Amendment. I'm going to be talking all about those in detail today, tomorrow, in the future. But all of them had 8 justices on 2 different sides, right? All of them had Scalia and Thomas combined with the new Bush judges of Alito and Roberts on one side, and all of them had the 2 Clinton judges, that would be Breyer and Ginsburg, along with the 2 Republicans who are, boy, what is now an anomaly in today's world. They were moderate Republicans, Justice Stevens, appointed by Gerald Ford, and Justice Souter, appointed by the first George Bush. Today they're called liberals. So what I think they are really is moderate Republicans. In any case, they were all on the other side. And in all 4-5-4 decisions, Justice Kennedy was the deciding vote. 2 on one side, 2 on the other side. Well, Kennedy, of course, same judge, justice who put George Bush in power, so hardly a liberal he, was just signing on to Scalia's work. And Scalia really had a good time with the Second Amendment. He always has. It takes me back to when I met Justice Scalia, and I've only met him once. It was in law school. It was a time when, as a law student, you can challenge a sitting justice in a way that you can't as an actual lawyer. And the Second Amendment was one of those things that people brought up. I dealt with other issues with Scalia. Some of you know, you've heard me talk about this before. But Scalia was going on and on about he believed in the strict construction of the Constitution and the strict words and strict meaning. And someone said, what about the Second Amendment? Surely the Second Amendment can't mean that anyone can keep and bear any arms they want. What if someone wants to have a nuclear warhead? And Scalia said, well, bear means to carry. Can you carry a gun? You can. Can you carry a nuclear warhead? You cannot. Next question. And everybody laughed at supposedly how he was taking all of this literally. But actually, Scalia couldn't take it literally, because to take the amendment literally and to ignore its preface is to make it make no sense whatsoever. I mean, if you take it with its premise, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, well, that makes perfect sense. You have a well-regulated militia, so the states regulate the militias. It's necessary to the security of a free, capital S, state. In other words, if the state of Massachusetts, and remember, this is pre-Civil War, or the state of South Carolina, wants to be protected from a national government, they can regulate a militia. They can protect themselves from standing armies like the king had. And the right of the people in those states, in well-regulated militias, to keep and bear arms, and won't be infringed, right? It protects their freedom. Later on, in fact, I think the South Carolinians might make the same argument into the Civil War. But bearing arms is understood to be a military thing. When's the last time you ever heard a police officer say, you know, well, where's the suspect? Well, he was bearing arms. I've never heard that. He was carrying a weapon. That's what we say when people are using weapons in their individual capacities. Soldiers? Soldiers bear arms. That's what they do. That's what it's understood to do. That makes perfect sense. Now, let's look at how Scalia, no longer the literalist, looks at the Second Amendment. First of all, he says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. We're going to ignore that preface. We're going to ignore it. We'll come back to it, he says in the opinion. Let's start with the middle of the sentence. Because, as you know, that's how you always read a sentence, right? You start in the middle. He says, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So the people, which he doesn't take as collective the people, we the people apparently means individual persons, even though, by the way, in the Fourth Amendment, it talks about persons to be seized, individuals. It talks about a person in the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held and so forth to self-incriminate themselves. Self-incriminate themselves. That's terrible. Anyway, Scalia says that the right of every individual to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed means that non-felons and non-mentally ill people can keep guns in their homes for self-defense. Now, that may well be reasonable. It may be perfectly reasonable, but it has no basis in the text of the Constitution. The Constitution doesn't say, well, mentally ill people can't have arms. It just says the right of the people to keep and bear arms. It doesn't say that felons can't bear arms. In fact, it doesn't say keep and bear arms in their home. He just made that up. That's nowhere in this. Why can't you keep and bear arms everywhere in public? And some gun nuts would want you to do that, right? If you take away the militia aspect of this amendment, what you really mean is that everybody can have guns. And that doesn't make sense. Not as a matter of constitutional law, not as a matter of logic. Because the purpose of the Constitution is to protect people's rights when they're in danger, right? And the founders understood that perhaps we could have too strong a central government. The founders, I think, would have a lot of sympathy with the things I argue about, that the president can't throw someone in jail without a trial or hold someone in Guantanamo Bay forever without bringing charges, without access to a lawyer, can't invade our homes without a warrant or spy on our private conversations without a warrant, that the government can't barge in our homes and torture us. I mean, I think they would have real sympathy for that. But if you're going to stop the government today from barging in your home, you're going to need a lot more than a handgun. Indeed, I don't even think a tank could cut it. Even if everyone had their own tank, they could just nuke you. The power of us to stand off the government with our muskets, as our founders did with the British 200-odd years ago, simply has gone by the wayside. The amendment is archaic. Now, does it mean it's extinct? No. Scalia argues, well, then the amendment is extinct. It's not. It still exists. Everyone has a right to join a well-regulated militia in the state. Indeed, the state can even call up people to serve in it. I would have no problem with the state of Louisiana calling up every able-bodied citizen to help other Louisianans suffering from Hurricane Katrina. In fact, I think it should have been done. But Scalia says, no, it can't be extinct. It must have meaning today, and it must have meaning outside a militia, even though the militia begins the amendment. But Scalia never talks about the Third Amendment. Do you know what the Third Amendment is? The Third Amendment of the Bill of Rights is certainly the least used amendment. I once looked in law books just to see, and of course there's tons and tons of litigation on the First Amendment, and that's freedom of religion and freedom of the press and very, very freedom of speech, very, very important amendment. Very little on the Second, lots on the Fourth and the Fifth and the Sixth, searches and seizures and capital cases and, you know, cruel and unusual punishment in the Eighth, so forth. You know what the Third Amendment is? The one that had zero litigation on it? No one had ever sued in all of American history based on the Third Amendment. The Third Amendment says, quote, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to prescribed by law. Got it? The government can't force you to house soldiers in time of peace. And if it's in war, they've got to pass a law about it. Well, that, again, like the Second Amendment, makes a lot of sense in the context of the 1700s. When you had founders going up against a king, and the king was housing soldiers in their homes. They didn't like that very much. But I don't believe a president has ever tried that. Now, you could take amendment, the Third Amendment, you could bring it to the present day. You could say, well, that means that if you have a house guest that you don't like, maybe it's a house guest that works for the government, you can throw them out even if they paid you rent. I don't know. Something ridiculous. And you could try to make it true to the present. But really the answer is the Third Amendment is basically extinct. It still exists. I mean, the government still can't force you to house soldiers, and the Second Amendment still exists. The government can't ban well-regulated state militias. But they don't have much use today. The irony is that an amendment that clearly has use today is one that Scalia himself called extinct. The Ninth Amendment, one of my favorite amendments, says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. What that means is just because we give you rights, explicit rights right here in the Constitution doesn't mean you don't have other rights. Things like a right to privacy, a man's home is his castle. Just because we've named a few doesn't mean you don't retain other rights. Now, Scalia says this is mere preamble. This is an entire amendment. It's one sentence. Doesn't have a preamble. It simply says that just because you name certain rights doesn't mean people don't retain other rights. He says that was meaningless. He said that to my face. But the Second Amendment, which clearly has a preamble, which says, in effect, not in effect, it says actually, I'm just going to read the damn thing again, a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, capital S, state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And if you look at the long history, you can see all of the fears of the founders of a standing army for the nation. The final words of Scalia's opinion, the court's opinion, says, are these. He writes, undoubtedly some think that the Second Amendment is outmoded in a society where our standing army is the pride of our nation, where well-trained police forces provide personal security, and where gun violence is a serious problem. That is perhaps debatable. What is not debatable is that it is not the role of this court to pronounce the Second Amendment extinct. Well, don't pronounce the Second Amendment extinct, Scalia. I told you it still has meaning, right? You could still have state militias, and the government, this national government, can't tell the state who can be in those militias. But we do have a standing army. In fact, if you want to argue that the Second Amendment prevented a standing army, you'd have a much greater grounds. The founders hated a standing army in peacetime. You could call them pacifists. They had a position, frankly, to the left of Denis Kucinich. They said that in peace we never need an army, and it is a danger to our liberty. And if you want to know the history of the Second Amendment, you know that the thing that the people feared most of all was that the standing army would have coup d'etats, military dictatorships would take over the country, and that the idea was if you have a gun in your militia, you could defend your state against this tyrannical national government. So maybe a standing army is against the Second Amendment, Scalia. I don't know, but it would make more sense than what you argued. Well-trained police forces provide personal security. You're damn right, Justice Scalia. They sure do. And one of the things I found very interesting was Justice Stevens' dissent, where he points out that such has always been the case in urban areas of the United States. Sure, it was perfectly understood that most Americans lived in rural areas in the 1700s. They were on the frontier. They were often fighting to take property from Native Americans, and they also had to deal with things like bears. And ruffians. And in the Wild West, there was no standing army. There was no police force. But did you know at the exact time that the Second Amendment became law, one of its big supporters was from Massachusetts, Samuel Adams, same guy that makes the beer, firmly supported the Second Amendment, did so because he hated the standing army. And in the Massachusetts Constitution, it said the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And guess what? In the city of Boston, in the state of Massachusetts, in 1789, actually 1783 through the time of the Second Amendment, which was 1791, Boston prohibited all firearms among its citizens, not just handguns, not disassembled as they do in D.C., every last one of them. At the same time as the Massachusetts Constitution protected the people's right to keep and bear arms. In other words, Massachusetts protected the right of its citizens to be in a militia at Lexington and Concord and to defend the security of a free state. That's what it says, necessary to the security of a free state. In fact, many states required their citizens to be in militias. But they banned firearms in Boston. They banned firearms in a close urban environment where they had a security force, like a kind of the forerunner to a modern police force. In other words, Massachusetts understood, as D.C. and Montana understand today, that there's a big difference between folks in the city and folks in the country. It would be ridiculous to ban arms in Montana. It will never happen. It should never happen. And I firmly support the right of Montanans to have their rifles. Frankly, most of them, I think, would prefer rifles over handguns because it's easier to shoot game with rifles. They are hunters. They're in the backwoods. They've got to worry about, wild creatures. It makes sense for the people of Montana to have guns. It makes no sense for the people in the District of Columbia to have guns. The District of Columbia has no rural area. It is the only jurisdiction in the United States that has no rural area. It is purely urban. What do people need guns for in an urban environment? Well, the Supreme Court will tell you that they need guns for self-defense. Okay. So let's look at statistics of self-defense. In the United States of America, and remember, D.C. is an urban environment. I'm sure it's worse in D.C. But in the entire United States of America, a study showed 36,000 gun murders a year. And this was in the 90s. And 82,000 gun accidents a year. Of the gun murders, 51% of the gun deaths, I should say, 51% were suicide, 44% were murder, 3% were accidents, 1% was unknown, and 1% was used in self-defense. When it came to woundings, some 67% were intentional. Another 20% were attempted suicide. Another 20% or so were accidents. 1% was in self-defense. 1 in 100. 99 times out of 100, a gun, a handgun, that shoots a person is not being used in self-defense. Not at all. 99% of the time. And in an urban environment, it's even worse. Let's face it. And isn't that what states' rights is all about? I mean, shouldn't the people of Montana and West Virginia and Tennessee be able to vote differently from the people of the District of Columbia and Boston and Rhode Island and Los Angeles and Chicago? Shouldn't they? You know, there's so many different statistics here. It's fascinating here. This is a 7-year study in Seattle. It had 9 shootings that were legally justified homicides or acts of self-defense. These are just guns in the homes, by the way, these statistics. 12 accidental deaths, 41 criminal homicides, 333 suicides. In 3 U.S. cities, guns kept in the home were 12 times more likely to be involved in the death or injury of a member of the household than in the killing or wounding of a bad guy in self-defense. I'm going to repeat that. That's important. If you have a gun in your home, in a U.S. city, we'll be fair, not in the country, in the city, it is 12 times more likely to be used to kill or injure someone in your home, you, your wife, your husband, your kids, your mother, your father. It is 12 times more likely to kill you or a household member than some bad guy. Now, I want you to think about this like, I don't know, Russian roulette. Let's see. Russian roulette is played with a six-chambered gun. You stick a bullet in one of the chambers, and you get a 5 out of 6 chance of living and a 1 out of 6 chance of dying. You could play Russian roulette with 2 guns, right? Mix up the 2 guns, put it in one chamber, and you have a 1 in 12 chance of dying and 11 in 12 chance of living. Still not a game I would play, but okay, better odds. I got another game for you. It's called Handgun Roulette. And in this game, we're going to take 2 guns, and one of them we're going to put every single chamber full of a bullet, all 6 chambers full of a bullet. And in another gun, we're going to fill 5 of the 6 with a bullet and leave 1 with an empty chamber. If you keep a gun in your home, in a city, you're playing Handgun Roulette. There's 11 in 12 shot, and it either won't be used at all, in which case it doesn't matter, right? Then it's irrelevant. But if it is used, there's an 11 in 12 shot that it will be used to shoot you or a member of your family. You're in effect taking 2 guns, loading 1 to the hilt, loading another 5 out of 6, mixing them up, grabbing 1 of them at random and pulling the trigger, and hoping you get that 1 empty chamber. Now, again, I believe in the populace. If the people of a state don't want to ban guns, that's their right. Certainly, some people know how to handle guns better than others. In fact, one of the problems with handguns is that everyone thinks they can handle them, including children. At least a rifle is big, it's heavy, it's hard to point at yourself. And it's more accurate, frankly, to shoot an intruder. Frankly, it's also more scary. If an intruder comes in your home and sees a long rifle heading at them, I think he'll be more likely to run than seeing a tiny little handgun in a shaking hand. So handguns are easy to handle. I'll grant you that. 13-year-old in D.C. just last week handled a gun. It was his mother's. He brought it over to a friend's house. They thought it was really cool. It was loaded. He killed his friend. Now, I don't think he intended to kill his friend. There's no evidence of that in the record. But a 13-year-old is dead. Scalia would think, well, that's just sort of part of life. 13-year-olds will kill 13-year-olds. Boys will be boys. In my view, the mother who owned that gun should be locked up for a long time. And I know she's been through a tragedy. The 13-year-old should be punished as well. I mean, he's 13. He's a juvenile. I understand that he probably shouldn't take the full measure of an adult. But the mother caused the death of another mother's son. She didn't do it intentionally. No more than a drunk driver that goes on the road and kills people does it intentionally. She did it negligently, criminally negligently. What is the purpose of having a locked gun in your home if you have children in your home? Having an unlocked gun, a loaded gun in your home with children in your home. Scalia's opinion actually says that you can't require trigger locks. You can't? What the heck is wrong with trigger locks? You got one on your gun. You hear an intruder. You do the combination, and boom, you're ready. Okay. And if there is no intruder in your home, and your kids are just playing with your gun, the combination saves their lives. Look. This isn't even really about the wisdom of the decision. It's about a constitutional question. But the fascinating thing about the Supreme Court opinion is they seem to know it is unwise. They seem to know it is unwise to ignore the preamble, as Scalia says, should always be done, that any person can keep and bear any arms. Well, a child's a person. Can every baby carry an arm? Every felon? Every mentally ill person? Why not? I mean, if that's really what the amendment means, then go for it, Scalia. Go for it. Nothing in the text of the Second Amendment says that you can't have mentally ill people carry guns outside the home, shoot up schools, see, as the Virginia Tech killer did. It's an amazing opinion. It's a scary opinion. And what's scary about it is where it has to come. The opinion itself says, well, you know, you can still stop machine guns and you can still, I'm not saying you can't prohibit concealed weapons outside the house, or I'm certainly not saying that you can carry weapons into government buildings. Why not, Justice Scalia? The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I think that if the amendment means what you say it means, we should all be able to attend Supreme Court hearings with guns in our laps. Loaded. We'll just use them in case we need them for self-defense. You don't want that, do you, Justice Scalia? No, no, no. Not when your safety is at stake. If you want to call in and discuss this, I would love to hear from you, whether as to the constitutionality or just the wisdom or what do you think of gun control laws in general. I do want to be clear that I do think that people have a right to have guns, and in particularly rural areas, people hunt. It's part of the American tradition. And as long as it's, you know, regulated and the guns are registered and they're out of the hands of children, I'm okay with that. I understand that's part of America, as long as you haven't committed a felony or mentally ill or whatever. There's reasonable regulation of guns. What's unreasonable is this Supreme Court decision. But if you want to call in and discuss this, I'd love to hear from you. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Well, John McCain's off to Colombia, which is the largest recipient of U.S. aid in Latin America and the most repressive. Right-wing paramilitaries, closely linked with Colombia's armed forces and often working for U.S. corporations, have declared an open season on labor organizers. None of this has stopped George Bush from lauding the Uribe government or from trying to railroad a free trade agreement with Colombia right through the Senate. John McCain supports that agreement. Barack Obama opposes it. McCain has also supported the assassination of a rebel leader by Colombian forces operating in Ecuador. Actually, Obama supported that one too. But Obama's been much more critical of Uribe's human rights record than McCain has, and McCain's campaign strategist, Charlie Black, was the chief lobbyist for Occidental Petroleum, which has a huge subsidiary in Colombia. Occidental, by the way, is one of those companies that's been implicated in the murder of trade unionists in Colombia. Why McCain now thinks going to Colombia will help his cause is beyond me, unless that cause is unrestrained corporate power. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about the first time that the United States Supreme Court has ever ruled in all of American history that the Second Amendment means that you can't have reasonable regulations of guns. Now, few would dispute that the D.C. government had a reasonable regulation. As I said, the District of Columbia is not Montana or West Virginia or rural Tennessee. It is an entirely urban environment. It used to be the murder capital of the United States. It still has murders way beyond its population. There were some 40 last year in a population of a mere 600,000. That's a lot of murders. That's it's almost 1 in 10,000. And it's gangs. And they're killing each other. And, you know, it's connected to larger issues. I understand that. The drug war, poverty, lack of opportunity. I get that. I'm still a liberal. But I also understand that when you've got gasoline running all over the place, you don't throw matches in it. Even if you have a right to own a match. It was reasonable to ban handguns in the District of Columbia. Easily concealable murder weapons. The kind that are used every day in gangs, in drive-by shootings, to rob stores. That's how they're used. The irony is that even in your own home, the kind that Scalia allows, even when you have a handgun in your own home and there's a burglar, you're still very likely to get in trouble. There was a study in Atlanta. In Atlanta, one-third of the households have guns, one out of three. There were 197 home invasion crimes in a certain period of time. Of those 197, three, or 1.5%, the person in the home successfully resisted with a gun. Intruders got to the gun twice as often as the homeowner did. I guess that's six. The other 189 times didn't affect it at all. So it's just not that helpful. It's just not that helpful as self-defense. It is, however, very helpful if you want to kill someone. It's very helpful if you want to kill yourself. Let's not forget that nationally, guns are used for suicide slightly more often than they're used for murder. 51% for suicide, 44% for murder. 3% accidents, 1% self-defense. The fascinating thing about this entire decision is that, they picked the most sympathetic plaintiff they could think of, right? They always do that. Hey, we do it too. There's a reason why the case of Loving v. Virginia, we chose Richard and Mildred Loving and put their names first, right? Loving v. Virginia. Well, they chose a sympathetic D.C. security guard, white guy who had no criminal record, wanted a gun, self-defense. And that's a guy who actually knows how to use it. I have less problem, by the way, with gun rights for people who take classes, know how to shoot, know how to protect themselves if someone comes after them. I really have much less problems for people like that who own guns. In any case, and Scalia was going on and on about the fact, because you can't own a gun in D.C., you just got to keep it unloaded and disassembled. And he was talking about the fact, well, then how would he use that in self-defense? It would break the law. Well, if he had an intruder in his home, he could easily put the gun together. Or take off the trigger lock, which is actually easier to do. Load the gun. Maybe not if someone bursts in his bedroom. But how often does that happen? Not very often. Most burglars are not in your home to kill you. And if they are and you're sleeping, they're probably going to succeed. And if you get awoken by a bump in the night and you reach into your nightstand and shoot your loaded gun into the darkness, you're probably going to kill your 7-year-old or your spouse. Maybe you just didn't know they were home. Maybe it's good to have to be awake enough to do the combination on a trigger lock. before you have a loaded gun at the ready. I know things I do at 2 in the morning that someone wakes me up out of a sound sleep. So this was a very sympathetic plaintiff, this security guard. Okay. And Scalia says, well, now, wait a minute. If someone's in his home and he's got to put the gun together and use it in self-defense, well, that's against the law. No one would prosecute the man for shooting an intruder in his home, even though it's against the law. As Justice Stevens points out, it is against the law to jaywalk. Right? You're not supposed to cross when the sign says do not walk. But if in self-defense you're running away from an attacker, I don't think you're going to get a jaywalking ticket. I think the police will understand. Likewise, the few individuals who know how to successfully use a gun, if they successfully use it in self-defense, not a prosecutor or jury in the country, and certainly not in the District of Columbia, would convict the man. So what is this case all about? It isn't about the security guard, I assure you. The case is about people all across the country who love their guns. They don't live in the District of Columbia. They live in Tennessee and West Virginia and Montana and Alaska and Nevada and rural areas all across the country. And they love their guns. They like to play with their guns. And they like to shoot things with their guns. And you know what? It's a little violent. It's not something that I would enjoy, but okay. You know, fine. I wouldn't bungee jump either. But I do gamble in Vegas, and I have jumped out of a plane once. I skydove, so who am I to complain about anyone else's likes and enjoys? If you have a sport that's dangerous and you're not endangering anyone but yourself, whatever. And hunting is a part of the national identity. I get that. And not just hunting for food, but hunting for sport. It's not something I'd want to do. Heck, I feel bad for the fish when I go fishing. I still do, but not that often. So I guess I'm a wimp. But if people want to go hunting and fishing, by all means, you haven't committed a crime. You're not a, you know, domestic violence. Get your gun and go shoot a poor, helpless deer. And I'll complain about it, but I won't at all restrict your right to do it. But in the District of Columbia, I assure you, there are no deer. There's no game. There are some pretty big rats. I mean, if you argue that people need, say, a BB gun to protect themselves from some large rats, I'm okay with that. That's self-defense. I get that. But there's no deer. There's no grizzly bears. There's no Injuns either. There are gangs. And there's a weakened police force, a weakened prosecutor force. The 100,000 cops that Bill Clinton put on the streets are being removed. And let me be clear, it's not just a conservative problem, it's a liberal problem too. There are plenty of liberals in the District of Columbia that are hesitant to convict when a poor African-American man kills another poor African-American man. And let me say, I'm just as angry at them. I know there are juries that say, well, we shouldn't put another black man in prison. I disagree. If he killed someone, lock him up. To refuse to lock him up when you know he committed the crime is a tremendous evil, because he'll commit another crime. It's also wrong for the victim. Some of you know, and I think I felt this way before this happened, but sometimes personal things do get in one's opinions, and some of you know that my sister was murdered. We need to lock up murderers. And we need police, and we need prosecutors, and we need jurors who are willing to do it. Now, no one supports the Constitution more than I do. No one supports the requirement of proof beyond a reasonable doubt more than I do. I do not want innocent people in jail. and you have the right to confront your accusers and to have lawyers and to give the best case for your defense that you can, absolutely. But if you're guilty, you need to be locked up. And you shouldn't be owning a gun. The upshot of all of this, which is fascinating to me, is that Republicans believe that ex-felons should be allowed to own guns, but shouldn't be allowed to vote. Because they think that the voting ballot is more dangerous than a loaded pistol. So you could have a guy who shot his wife, gets out of jail 15 years later, applies for a gun, and the gun nuts and Scalia would say, well, you served your time. Have a gun. But by all means, don't vote. Nah, don't vote. Voters are scary. Voters are dangerous. Voters can take Republican power. Most murderers just shoot poor black people. Of course, the case has no limits. Scalia says, well, that federal laws that prohibit machine guns can stay in force. Why, Scalia? I mean, I can keep and bear a machine gun. If bear just means to carry, I can carry a machine gun. I can carry anthrax. I can carry a nuclear suitcase. Maybe not a warhead, but I can carry a dirty bomb. Maybe I want it for self-defense in my own home. A nuclear bomb, a radioactive suitcase. My rights shall not be infringed. If it's not about a militia, Scalia, where does it stop? You can't tell us, can you? You have no answer for that. 877-4-HEAD-ON. I would like to hear from y'all. I see there's a lot of chat in the chat room, and I don't have time to read it when I'm on the air. So call in. Let me know what you're thinking. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. There were, of course, other opinions. Oh, let me say one more thing before I move on to other opinions. I'm going to do a lot of those tomorrow. In terms of pure constitutional law, this is a decision that had been rendered years ago. For the first 150 years of the Bill of Rights, became part of our Constitution in 1791. And during that time, no one thought you had a right to keep and bear arms. As I said, Boston had laws that prevented you from doing it. Right after the Civil War, there you could argue there the Second Amendment should apply. There you could argue if you were a Confederate Southerner that, hey, South Carolina gets to have its militia. And Georgia, and Tennessee, Virginia, they were just protecting their homes against the standing army of the national government. Indeed, a strong argument can be made for the secessionists based on the Second Amendment. And if it's individual rights to arms you want, well, let's just look right after the Civil War, when lots of freedmen, lots of ex-slaves, tried to band together in militias to protect themselves and their property. I can't think of anything truer to the spirit of the Second Amendment than freedmen joining together in well-regulated militias with arms to protect themselves from roving bands of Ku Klux Klansmen. But their rights weren't protected either. No. No one complained when the southern states confiscated the guns of the ex-slaves. Fast forward to the very first case to put this squarely on the record. It was United States v. Miller, 1939. And in that case, the United States Supreme Court was explicit and it was clear. It said that the purpose of the Second Amendment was to protect a well-regulated state militia. And I understand that times change. I understand that, okay, handguns, are different from muskets. I'm not saying that you can only protect people's right to own muskets, just like I'm not saying in the Fourth Amendment that you can't prohibit the government from spying on telephone calls just because telephones didn't exist in the 1700s. You had the right to keep your papers private. You have a right to keep your telephone calls private. That makes sense, even though telephone calls didn't exist. And you had a right to use a militia, to use a musket in a militia in the 1780s. You have a right to use a gun in a militia, a handgun, or even, frankly, a machine gun in a militia. I'm going farther, I guess. But, yeah, I think you have a right in a well-regulated militia to handle machine guns. I'll say it here and now. That's what the Second Amendment protects. But the amendment doesn't ask us to assume things that make no sense at all. I mean, if you look at the purpose of the amendment, the purpose was to protect Americans against an oppressive, tyrannical central government. In this way, the gun nuts are right. I'll give them their due. You know, I may not be happy that this is there, but the Constitution is the Constitution. I respect it, even where I don't agree with it. And the gun nuts are right. The purpose of the Second Amendment is to protect individual liberty against an overweening state. And that individual liberty, as practiced by well-meaning, trained groups of men and women organizing themselves in a militia. I think, for example, of neighborhood watch groups. I think those, if regulated by the state, are exactly what the Second Amendment's about. Heck, even guardian angels, what do they call? Is that what they called them? Heaven's Angels? I forgot what they called them, the group in New York. I think they called them guardian angels. Again, the state has a right to regulate them, but training a group of individuals who haven't committed a crime and are trying to protect their neighborhoods? Well, that's exactly what the Second Amendment is about. But not about keeping guns in your homes because you belong to a gang. Betsy, on the line from Texas. Betsy, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good, good. I'm glad you called in. What are your thoughts?
In Texas, we have very little gun control. And it's, you know, you just, I don't like it. I don't like knowing that half of my neighbors are armed, or more than half of my neighbors.
That's the problem with living in Texas, Betsy. I mean, I support states' rights.
Texans have a right to vote
that way.
Yeah, well, I can't leave for four more years. But anyway, that's not
where I go. There are other states. We can save you, Betsy.
In four years, I'm leaving.
Okay.
Anyway, the lady who styles my hair.
Yeah.
She cuts my hair. She uses scissors. She had to go through a whole training program. She had to have hours of practice. She had to have somebody supervise her practice. She had to
all because she uses scissors.
Hair cutting. And so that she can use scissors to make my hair straight. Cut my hair in a straight line.
That's a good point.
And, you know, I teach. I'm an educator. I had to go to college. I had to take lots of classes on the history of education and the philosophy of education and educational methods of this, educational methods of that. And I had to do a student teaching and a practicum before they would let me in a classroom. Why is it that someone can own a gun tomorrow with a driver's license that nobody even checks?
You know,
why is it
I'm always fascinated by the fact
show and buy a gun?
I'm always fascinated by the fact that, you know, there are tens of thousands of Americans killed every year in car accidents. That's true. And because of that, the government requires every single American to register their cars, to get driver's licenses, to undergo tests to get those driver's licenses, because we know that, yes, cars can kill. They almost never kill intentionally. But that's required.
The driver's ed.
Right. But guns, unlike cars, are usually used intentionally.
Yes.
And handguns particularly, and, you know, maybe Bob's going to correct me in the next hour because I'm sure he's handled guns, and I will fully admit that the only guns I ever handled were – you know, squirt guns. So I'll just admit to being a city boy on this one. But
I know a lot of people who have guns because of coyotes.
And that makes sense. Again, that goes back to the old wilderness question, to what the founders really were worried about. That makes perfect sense. But it's amazing to me, if you want a gun to shoot a coyote, all you have to do is go and get it registered and get fingerprinted and show, you know, you've never committed a violent crime and, you know, you don't have children in your home or you have a trigger lock if you do have children in your home, then by all means, have a gun. You know, this whole idea that liberals want to take their guns, I'm damn liberal and I don't want to take your guns. I don't. In a rural area, in a state like Texas where the people love their guns and voted for them, you know, but I don't live in Texas. I'll tell you something, Betsy. Well, I grew up in Tennessee, as I think you know. And yeah. I used to go to a we had a student congress, it was called. And we had high school students. And since Nashville, Tennessee is the state capital, when the state legislature wasn't in session, they actually let us – God, they probably wouldn't do that today. They let these high school kids, two or three from every school, come and actually sit in the chairs of the legislators representing our schools, and we would pass bills and amendments and everything like that from the
they
actual seats of
the
I think it's a great tradition.
In
any case,
because our legislature only meets in odd numbered years, so in even numbered years they have juniors and seniors in high school.
They might as well use the space. And yes, Lalo, I was a nerd. Leave me alone. In any case, I went to the student congress, and I had a bill. It was a very modest bill, something about registering guns. And I got up, and I made my passionate little speech about, you know, we register cars, we should be able to register guns, and I'm, you know, this little 14-year-old, and I make my speech, and I sit down. And then this large senior guy gets up next with his thick southern accent and says, well, I don't know about y'all, but I need a gun to feel safe. How many people in this room brought a gun today and were in the state legislature? And more than half of the room raises their hands. And I'm like,
I teach in a high school, and
I was like, okay, I'm not going to make any further argument on my bill. Now, I hope they meant that he left them in their cars. I assume. I didn't ask.
No.
I didn't ask. But he said, how many are packing today? I assume that means they brought it in. This is the state legislature.
Point. Yes.
It was shocking
here
to me.
They,
now, again,
here they
I don't think that would happen today.
Building. You can't go into the Capitol building with a gun.
You can't today, I'm
many,
sure, but you could then.
Many businesses have a sign that say that arms are prohibited.
You know, that's such a weird sign. It's like if you're going to carry arms, are you really going to follow the sign?
I have a friend who carries a gun everywhere. And he'll go and have lunch in his daughter's kindergarten class. And he's you know, carrying.
You know, the other thing is that there's a natural curiosity of children. Right? I mean, what is that bright, shiny object? You know, children will touch a hot stove, a little baby, if you let him or her.
Yeah.
What is that bright, shiny object?
Right.
And the idea, I guess the thing that most offended me more than anything else was Scalia being against trigger locks. What the heck is the problem with trigger locks? It is clearly a safety issue. If you're using the gun correctly, you know how to remove the lock. And if you don't, you shouldn't.
Right. Right.
Now, Betsy, do you live in Austin, the one supposedly decent place in Texas, or do you live outside of Austin in the real Texas?
I live in suburban Austin.
Okay, so I don't know whether that counts or not. I'm told that Austin is actually a very pleasant, wonderful city. So please understand when I attack Texas.
I live in a very liberal area, but it's in terms of gun access and in terms of, you know, animals and the number of deer and all of that, it's more suburban, but it's still within the city limits.
Okay, so basically you live in an island in a hurricane. You live you live in a decent area surrounded. No, okay, because I wanted to be clear. I am not attacking Austin. I haven't been there, but from what I hear, it's a wonderful, wonderful place. And the only part of Texas that apparently is worth living in, I've been told. So, you know, I shouldn't attack all Texans. I really shouldn't. Because
I haven't lived in all of the area.
I remember I was at an airport, and I was making a joke about Texas with someone, and I was at Southwest Airlines, And my friend said, because I tend to talk loud. I know that's hard to believe. And he said, just out of curiosity, how many folks here are from Texas? Like, all raised their hands. I'm like, oops. I'm sure there are a lot of decent Texans out there. In fact, the most recent polls I've seen show some 40% of Texans plus going for Obama. And I don't think he's going to win the state. But the point is that there are plenty of decent, well-meaning people in Texas. My problem is just with the majority. But there's a strong minority of decent people there, and I don't want to cast aspersions on any group of people. That's what prejudice is about. In any case, thank you very much for calling in, Betsy. I appreciate it. Calling again sometime. And tomorrow I'm going over more of these Supreme Court decisions, from the Millionaire's Amendment to the decision about whether or not to execute someone who raped a child. More of that next tomorrow. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.